are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 27. This minute opens with Prometheus having landed on LV-223 and ends with Shaw indicating to Jackson's flamethrower and asking what that's for. It feels like this ship has been in the process of landing for an eternity. It's been weeks from my perspective. In the last minute, I mentioned that classically trained actors tend to have more range than those who learn the craft as they go. Totally forgot to mention Idris as an exception, an incredible actor who has a background in music, no formal training in acting at all. That makes him even more impressive than he already is. We get shots of Shaw, Ford, and David looking at the engineer structure in awe and wonder. There's a real sense of weight and importance given to this moment. You really do feel like they are on the verge of an extraordinary discovery. The pyramid structure is beautifully framed within the lines of the Prometheus' windscreen. What do we call the windscreen? Apparently that's a term that's relevant to planes, so I guess so.
Captain, would you please tell the survey team to suit up and meet us in the airlock?
There's only 6 hours left of daylight. Why don't you leave it till the morning?
Oh, no. It's Christmas, Captain, and I want to open my presents.
Charlie's eyes are glassy, and his voice and mannerisms are so excited he is nigh on deranged. He's a man on a mission to God.
You, boy, you're coming with us.
I'd be delighted.
Attention. Charlie seems very comfortable ordering the android around, which leads me to think he has prior experience with synthetics. Fassbender says, with David, the viewer should never be entirely sure of his intentions. Is he being sarcastic? Is he mocking you? His motives are almost always ambiguous. In this scene it is evident, but only when observed closely, that David is mocking Charlie as much as his programming will allow. Charlie gave an order, not an invitation, so the response, "I'd be delighted," doesn't quite make sense. It's a subtle power move, same with him running his hand through his hair in a preening fashion. There is an element of asserting his superiority. He is more refined, more sophisticated than Charlie, and he knows it. David does not report to anyone but Wayland and Vickers. What is conveyed here is that David is obeying Holloway only because he wants to, that it is his choice. As usual, his voice is too polite, too cold. There is an ever-present sense of condescension. It's unnerving, like every other aspect of David, and yet it goes unobserved and unremarked upon by anyone else. They're all too preoccupied with their mission to pay attention to him, and they don't consider an android all that important. This allows David plenty of cover to carry out his own agenda. It reminds me of a common trope in old detective stories. Servants get away with murder because everyone else just ignores them. In fact, in the Victorian age, it was considered customary not to look a servant in the eye, even a waiter. I can't remember which Sherlock Holmes story featured this trope, but I vaguely recall some servant almost got away with murder because, despite pouring drinks for these people, no one took much notice of their appearance and so were unable to identify them. It is no wonder, then, that Fassbender took inspiration from the 1963 film The Servant, in which a manservant named Barrett comes to dominate his master through manipulation and gaslighting. In terms of performance, I would compare Dirk Bogarde as Barrett to Malcolm McDowell. There's also something a bit rat-like about the character, where I would compare David to a cat. However, both characters have an insidious edge to them, a power of some kind hidden beneath a benign exterior. The music track heard in this scene is Going In, which in my opinion should be the theme of the film, as it better encapsulates the vibe of the film overall. It's orchestral, but a bit electronic. It's got quite a pronounced beat to it, which is rare for film scores. We hear some sound effects in this scene that are taken from Alien, certain beeps and electronic sounds that can be heard in Alien Isolation as well. In this minute, David is walking along, then seems to raise his eyebrows and turn to Charlie in the background. I guess we can assume the events of the next minute are happening concurrently with this scene with Shaw. The spacesuits each have their own elaborate stations that they are docked into. It's all very theatrical. I'm sure they could just be stored in a crate just fine, I'm surprised the crew are having to fiddle around with the suit so much. It appears that Shaw is having to do something to the visor monitors. Shouldn't they all be ready to go? Hasn't David been maintaining the ship's equipment? So, logically, it doesn't make much sense. But visually, it makes the scene more dynamic. Everyone is bustling about with something to do. It's much better than the opposite problem, where characters aren't really interacting with their environment much, and nothing feels real or lived in. You see this a lot in bad genre movies, but sometimes it's a problem in good movies too. I love Thor, and Asgard looks beautiful, but everyone just seems to be standing around with swords and glamorous costumes. I don't get a sense of what they get up to in a day. But on the Prometheus, everyone seems to move with purpose. Everything on the ship is practical and highly interactive, and the importance of that in filmmaking cannot be overstated. Actors hate working against a green screen because they're essentially performing blind. Just look at the Star Wars prequels. Whereas real sets allow them to improvise and build a sense of the world for themselves and their character. This minute cuts off just before Shaw begins talking to Jackson, so I would say this is one scene that is best viewed as a 2-minute segment rather than the now standard 1 minute. I love these spacesuits, they are so iconic. Most spacesuits in film have become homogenous. They all look roughly the same with minor differences, and most of them are just black. But the Prometheus EVA suits are instantly recognisable. There's something very 60s about them, especially the egg-shaped helmets. They look like something out of an old pulp magazine, like Captain Future, but with a much more sophisticated colour palette. You might be surprised to learn that the armoured parts are in fact not black, but taupe, or taupe, as the Americans say. There's even a bit of a Fantastic Four vibe to these costumes, at least to me. It might just be the blue, but yeah, I could absolutely imagine Reed Richards floating around the negative zone wearing the exact same thing. I also like the gold caps. But one minor complaint I have is the name badges on the forehead. That looks just a bit dorky to me. Otherwise, it is impressive that these costumes look beautiful, expensive, practical, and functional. The costume department has really accomplished a thing of beauty here. I have wanted one of those spacesuits for years, and I might just get around to making one for myself soon. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson, signing off. You can find me on traviandesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.